Well, I'm very pleased to have been joined again today by Brian Hughes, consultant solicitor from Shenfield-based Rayner Hughes. Now, last time you were here, Brian, you revealed the horrors involved in personal bankruptcy, and today you're going to be looking at the related issue of liquidation, which of course applies to companies. So please explain just what liquidation involves.
Well, Scott, basically it occurs when a company's run out of money to trade or pay its debts or can no longer trade. There are many reasons why this might occur and may often be due to circumstances beyond that company's control. When, if, for example, the market for their goods and or services no longer exists, the key benefit available to any sole trader or any group of persons running a business is that if they can avoid personal bankruptcy by incorporating the business as a limited liability company. The word limited, or LTD for short, means that the liability for the company's debts is limited to the amount of capital the shareholders have invested in the concern.
So how would you go about forming a limited company in the first place?
In order to form a company, you have two options. Either ask your accountant to deal with the incorporation of a company which suited your purpose, or alternatively, buy an incorporated company off the shelf, usually for a couple of £100. Any off-the-shelf company would have to have a memorandum which is a list of the company's objectives and articles of association which covered the rules relating to the share capital, transmission of shares, etc. Both would have to be appropriate for a private trading company dealing with the type of business in which you're involved. Any incorporated company has to have a registered office, a director, and a company secretary, and most importantly, shares and share capital. You could put capital into the company by opening a bank account in the name of the company. If you paid £100 into it, you could then issue 100 £1 shares in the company, which could theoretically be split between you and your wife or possibly a business partner.
So would I be right in thinking that anyone could theoretically start a business and then be liable for that company's debts only to the extent of the capital invested in the shares? If that's right, then surely this could be open to abuse on a massive scale.
Well, firstly, all companies are covered by the various companies acts and must all make an annual return and submit accounts every financial year to Companies House. The accounts have to be certified by a professional accountant who is under a duty to report anything untoward. Strict identity checks are also required for directors and other officers of companies, and most banks require directors of companies to give personal guarantees to repay the money lent by the bank to their companies. Secondly, the Insolvency Service also investigates companies to make sure that there's no misconduct on the part of the directors. And thirdly, many suppliers retain the title in their products until their bills are paid.
But honest businessmen might still lose out if they've been dealing with dishonest companies who build up debts which they've no intention of settling, knowing that the directors of the company can just walk away due to the limits of their personal liability.
Sadly, this is all too common, I'm afraid, particularly the building industry. The failures of many companies to pay VAT and the tax deducted from employees' salaries to HM Revenue and Customs also results in many company liquidations and the creation of Phoenix companies.
That's nothing to do with us.
No, nothing to do with you at all.
Now, I've heard of shell companies, but just what are Phoenix companies?
Well, they're companies that quite literally arise from the ashes. Many company directors whose companies are in deep debt decide it would be more beneficial for them to start again by creating a new company. So they simply liquidate the original company and then resume trading, often from the same location as before, but under a slightly different name. But now free of debt, they can carry on trading with the same customers and suppliers. This happens quite a lot in the fields of leisure and catering, where the same directors pop up with a differently named company. However, if they trade under a name which is the same or substantially the same as the company in liquidation without the approval of the court, they will be guilty of an offence under the Insolvency Act. And those involved in the management of a Phoenix company may also be held personally liable for the debts of the company. In other words, many steps have been taken over the years to restrict and punish fraud and dishonesty.
Now, we started out by looking at instances where a company has to go into liquidation for reasons quite outside their control. So how does this work?
Well, it really comes down to whether it has sufficient assets to pay off all its creditors, in which case it can enter into a voluntary liquidation. Sometimes, of course, the company can enter into a CVA, a company voluntary arrangement, where, with the agreement of a minimum of 75% of the creditors, it can sell off its unprofitable parts to continue trading. This often suits creditors better than killing off the company. You read about this sort of thing in the papers all the time, where major public companies close lots of their stores and enter into company voluntary arrangements with their creditors.
But what if it doesn't have enough money or assets to satisfy creditors, or the creditors turn down a CVA?
In such cases, the company would be placed in administration. The official receiver steps in and takes over the company in an effort to get the best value for creditors. And so, quite often, administrators will be appointed to run the business until a purchaser is found. If a purchaser cannot be found, the official receiver sells everything the company owns, and he has to be careful here that the goods that have been supplied where title is retained are not included in the company's assets. Mm-hmm. He then distributes the proceeds of sale in a particular order. First of all, the official receiver himself, and the administrator's costs, not surprisingly. Then creditors with fixed charges on the company's properties, or property or properties, not much the receiver can do about that. After this, the official receiver pays amounts owing by way of salaries to employees, then sums due in respect of tax and NIC contributions to HM Revenue and Customs. After that, the receiver will pay off creditors with floating charges over the company's assets, like debentures, then creditors with no security, and finally, if everything else has been paid, distribute the balance, in the case of public companies, to the shareholders, provided they have any value. The receiver may then apply to have the company struck off the register of companies on the dissolution of the company.
So what steps can be taken to avoid dealing with questionable companies in the first place?
You can take certain steps. You can make a search for people who have gone bankrupt in the past, and you can also check the disqualified directors register. There are official government websites for both. But I haven't mentioned that there are two types of companies, private companies and public companies. And private companies can be subdivided into trading and non-trading companies. There are also companies limited by guarantee, but these are rare. Now, you're most likely to come across non-trading private companies in property transactions where the tenants of a building have shares in a company that owns the freehold, or they have shares in a management company that runs a block of flats on all the roads and communal areas on a housing estate. In these cases, the rules laid down by the Companies Acts are less stringent because no one is likely to lose anything. But management of blocks of flats by this sort of company is a different area, and one which I might tackle in a later talk. It's an interesting area which I've encountered frequently in the past.
Well, thanks very much indeed coming in, Brian, and talking us through another legal quagmire. And we'll look forward to hearing from you again in due course.
Well, thank you very much, Scott. I just hope that made some sense to everyone. It's a rather difficult subject to get a grip on.
As so many of them are. Thanks very much indeed. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks.